Welcome to Inside New Mexico. I'm Derek Underhill, and I'm talking with the chairman of our Republican Party of New Mexico, former congressman of the 2nd Congressional District of New Mexico, Steve Pierce.
So, Derek, we've got an exciting program today. We're going to talk a little bit about Deb Haaland and her nomination. We're going to visit about where the election stands today, a little bit of information on how it moves forward, if people are going to object to the Electoral College vote. Eric Swalwell, one of the Democrats on the Intel Committee, and the Intel Committee has access to top secret information that not even the rest of the people in Congress get access to, and he has been found that he's sleeping with a Chinese spy. We're going to talk about that in the third segment, so stay tuned. Got an interesting program for you today.
I see now where our congresswoman from the 1st Congressional District, Deb Haaland, has been chosen by the Biden administration to be Interior Secretary. Tell us what that means for New Mexico.
Well, each state has different requirements from D.C. And so if you're in New York City, the Financial Services Committee is just very important. It has to do with banking, international finance, all of those things. But if you're in New Mexico, Interior is the most important secretary of the whole administration. They have oil and gas. They have the public lands, the BLM, national parks, the national monuments. They administer the Indian lands. They have jurisdiction over the surface waters of the country, the streams and rivers. And so Interior is just tremendously important for New Mexico with New Mexico's public lands and production of oil and gas. I want to be positive about any New Mexican who gets elevated to a position of leadership in the administration. So I want to feel good about Representative Haaland getting this nod from Biden. But I tell you, it's really difficult to find the silver lining in this cloud because she's taken such an extreme stance on oil and gas. She said she wholeheartedly opposes any fracking or drilling on federal lands. Well, that's about a third of the land in New Mexico, but it's about half of the production in New Mexico. And so you can imagine that our industry, our jobs would be really diminished greatly. The tax revenues to our state would be diminished. That means that we would have less money to pay our teachers, less money for public safety, less money to fight crime and to take care of people who really are struggling in life, less money for all of those programs because oil and gas provides about 40% of New Mexico's state budget. So when you consider those factors, you say, whoa, this could play out very badly. Now, people will say, well, she's going to moderate those stances. I think that if Joe Biden would have wanted her to moderate the stances, he would have done that, and he would have kind of had her come out publicly before nominating her and make statements like, you know, as much as we want it to stop oil and gas drilling across public lands, that it's just important for us to have energy production here in the country and we become energy independent. Yeah, she could have made some statements that began to soften up her stance, but instead he went straight to her with all of those things in public record. I think that the radical left is pushing him into all of his picks. You can't imagine the destruction that some of these cabinet secretaries are going to be able to implement as they serve. And so we wish Deb Haaland well. We'll also sit here and observe closely how she does respond to the energy needs of the nation and to public access to public grounds. Just a very important selection.
As far as the election goes with President Trump and Joe Biden, I'm hearing even some Republicans now saying, well, Trump should just concede. But apparently there is starting to be some serious evidence now, not just statistics. And I'm hearing the possibility of Congress not accepting the electoral votes. I know you're still counting votes in New Mexico. The president has filed a couple of IPRA requests. So tell us what's going on.
Well, we are counting votes here in New Mexico. RPNM impounded the votes in Bernalillo County. We had as good a record during the election day activities as anywhere in the state. And so we are counting absentee ballots right now. We're able to do about 10,000 of those ballots a day. There are 140,000 of them. We've been given an extension, so we'll count up to Christmas Day, take that day off, and then start the day after until we finish those. But we feel like that it's necessary for us to do our due diligence to look more closely. There were anomalies throughout the state, as they were through the country, and then there were the violations of the law where the Democrats just literally kicked us out of the processes in a couple of the counties, and we took that case to the Supreme Court. They refused to hear it. But right now, we're still counting votes, and I trust that the president is doing the same thing in all of the states across the country that were so close and switched this election from Trump on election night to the next day, moving it towards Joe Biden. So we'll see. But as you mentioned, the Electoral College, when Congress convenes, one of their first duty in the new Congress, and that's going to be about January the 5th or the 6th, the first Tuesday, I think it is, after New Year's, then the House and the Senate will come together and they will hear the vote from the electors. When that vote is finished, now there's got to be a debate. And if anyone objects, there has to be 2 hours of debate on the objection. Nancy Pelosi controls the House. There's no doubt about that. So eventually, all of those objections are going to be turned down unless the Trump team is able to find really hard evidence that massive vote shifts were occurring. As much as anything else, we're playing for the future. We want fair elections into the foreseeable future for the country. It's a key to having a strong republic, having people trust that the elections are fair. You've got roughly 30 to 40% of the nation's population believe that this was not a fair election. They believe that things were done that were not according to the law. They don't believe the outcome of the election reflects the way that the people voted. And so that's a very bad position for a republic to be in. A government of the people, by the people, for the people needs the confidence of the people. So around the country, you have folks who are saying that they're just not going to take the result of this election as true. So it's important for the Trump team to be pursuing every legal avenue they can. The Supreme Court has turned down one or two of the cases that have been sent up to them. But all in all, still a lot of questions left to go before that January deadline when the U.S. Congress either affirms or turns down the vote of the Electoral College. If that were to occur, let's say that massive evidence was pushed forward and even Democrats would reject the idea that it was a fair election, then it would come down to a vote only in the U.S. House, not the U.S. Senate, only in the U.S. House. Each delegation gets one vote. Republicans control more than half of those delegations, so that would bode well for the president. But we've got a lot of things to do before we consider those things, but that's basically where the election stands today.
I saw Nevada found, not calculated, but found 14,000 people that have voted twice for Biden and proved it through Social Security numbers. People would vote for Biden using the name Bill and then again using the name William, or women would vote using their maiden name and again with their married name. That's real evidence. Are you finding anything like that here in New Mexico?
We have found dead people who voted. We found people who've moved out of state and tried to get the registration changed. The Secretary of State never cleans up those rolls. And we found that they were sent absentee ballots. It's very difficult when we got kicked out of the absentee ballot certification process to determine if they voted or not, because once those ballots are separated from the envelopes, you really don't have much check. And that happened while we were omitted out of the process. A very unfortunate thing. But the important takeaway is that nationwide, people are looking very carefully at the way the election is conducted. And folks are saying that it just shouldn't be this way. It shouldn't take 2 weeks to count votes. We used to be able to count them when there were paper ballots all in one night. And so it's right to ask the questions, and we're going to continue to ask those. We won't make allegations until we find definite proof. But yes, we're still looking.
Steve Pearce and I will return with our special guest in just a moment on Inside New Mexico.
National Guard and Reserve members are true leaders, both in the military and in the workplace. They are highly skilled and get the job done every day. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve, ESGR, can help you recruit top-notch service members to your workforce. Hiring Guard and Reserve members is good for your business and good for your community. Visit esgr.mil/employers to learn more.
Welcome back to Inside New Mexico. It's time for Steve Pearce to welcome our guest for this week.
Derek, as we mentioned at the beginning of the program, we have a special guest today. Nikki Curran is the new executive director of the Republican Party of New Mexico. She brings just a tremendous background to the state, but I want her to talk about that background, let you know where she grew up so that the people of New Mexico will know exactly who it is that is managing the Republican Party in the state of New Mexico these days.
Thank you, Steve. Steve. I am a native Clovis gal. I am a product of eastern New Mexico, and I'm a fourth-generation New Mexican on my father's side. I graduated from Clovis High. I'm a fighting Wildcat, true and true. And I attended Ole Miss and studied journalism and public relations there. And then I had the opportunity to work for our esteemed late Senator Pete Domenici, which was such an honor. I was in a couple of roles in his office, but primarily I helped with his schedule, which was a lot of work. At the time, he was the chairman of the budget committee, and the man was on the go nonstop. And then I also was in charge of just constituent services, which was actually a huge responsibility because the senator made it known that his constituents were his number one priority. And so we always wanted our New Mexicans to feel like we were doing such a good job for them. And we tried to turn around any request that we had from the state and our people in New Mexico within 48 hours. I then went to work for Senator Thad Cochran, who represented Mississippi. Unfortunately, both these gentlemen have passed in the last few years, but Senator Cochran was a part of the Republican leadership in the Senate, and I was in his personal office for a while there, and I worked directly with the senator. I did several things, more on the, I guess you could say, the honoraria. I helped with the schedule, multiple things in the main office, and then when he became conference secretary for the Senate leadership at the time, I was involved in helping do research for other Republican senators to further their message to the country. From there, I met a gentleman from Portland, Oregon, who was working for Senator Mark Hatfield. And we married in D.C., and then we moved back to Portland, Oregon, and worked in public relations and marketing. And then we moved to Charleston, South Carolina, and for the last 25 years, I have been in Charleston working freelance as a marketing communications person, doing a lot of public affairs, volunteer work with the Republican Party there, and then came back to New Mexico 3 years ago to take care of my ailing mother. And the Lord opened a lot of doors for my husband and I here in New Mexico, and we're here, and I'm honored to be a part of the Republican Party again here, Steve.
Well, that's just a stellar background. Not many people can claim to have, first of all, gone from eastern New Mexico to Washington, then worked their way up the ladder to where they're working in the leadership office in the U.S. Senate. And so a tremendous background. Talk a little bit about your marketing skills. That's something that I think that our listeners will find interesting as we move the party forward.
You know, marketing at the end of the day is about reaching people with a message. And we here at the party have a very valuable message to articulate to all of New Mexicans of every culture. So I'm really excited. I have had 30 years of experience in fundraising, both for political candidates. Also, I'm proud to say that I am a specialist in the not-for-profit world, which, you know, you have to do a lot of fundraising when you work with not-for-profits. So I have a lot of background there. And then I have the opportunity to work for, I would say, two of the most outstanding public relations and marketing firms in the Northwest. One is Cohen Weather, which is owned by the Ogilvy Mather International Group. And we had international clients. Some of you might be familiar with Doc Martin shoes. The Bonneville Power Administration was one of our clients. I've got very diverse experience doing public relations and marketing, and I'd like to translate that to help the party as we move forward. I know that we've been so successful in this last cycle, but Steve, you and I talked about this yesterday, how we have now set the stellar foundation for turning New Mexico red in the next cycle. And I believe my skill set will help us do that within the party.
Talk a little bit about the policies that you think that the Republican Party should be implementing under your leadership.
I would love to see women playing a bigger role in politics in New Mexico. I'm so proud that we had so many women candidates in this last election cycle, I was the campaign manager for Melissa Frizell out of Taos County, and I was so proud of Melissa and how she handled herself and the headway that she made there in a very difficult district.
Talk a little bit about your race there in northern New Mexico, helping a female candidate take on one of the most powerful and longstanding Democrats in office.
You that know Melissa Frizell, she is a pistol. She is a real pistol of a woman. She has a very interesting background, and she is a go-getter. I met Melissa in June, and I spent about an hour with her at the Lavanda restaurant, and we talked about what her goals were, and she asked me if I could please help her. When we got to work, we reached people through social media. We had very, very little money. And at that time, the governor really had a shutdown. I was very disappointed how Senator Pete Campos, our opponent, didn't run a campaign. We had an opportunity to do an online debate with him on Facebook. Highland University wanted to sponsor a debate using their political science students to set it up, and it would have been just a wonderful opportunity. Well, he just went, excuse me, Derek, radio silent. And we could not have any dialogue with him. But Melissa had a great showing. We did lose, but there were a lot of lessons learned. And I have no doubt that in the future, Melissa will win that seat.
I think what you're pointing out there with Senator Pete Campos is just an arrogance of the Democrats. They don't feel like they have to debate. They don't feel like they have to campaign. They take the vote for granted. And that's always a risky thing in politics. It's risky in sports, risky in life to take any element for granted. And so I think you're correctly pointing out that Melissa will eventually win that seat. She's just got to come back and let the voters see her a couple of times. A heavily Democrat area. I think Democrats are tired of where the progressives are taking their party. And so I just encourage you, as you work with candidates, to keep them engaged through one or two cycles. We are just, I think, going to turn the state red with candidates like Melissa and the other just sterling candidates that we had running for office this time. Is there anything else that you'd like to state to the listeners here in New Mexico before we go?
Sure. I just want the listeners in New Mexico to know that the Republican Party welcomes them. We are the party of opportunity. We're the party of personal growth. And if anyone has any questions, I ask them to contact us at the party in Albuquerque. And we'd love to have some dialogue with them. So they're all welcome to call me, Nikki Kern, at the party in Albuquerque, and get involved. I don't care what party you're a part of. Just get involved and exercise your rights as an American.
Well stated. Nikki Kern, the new executive director for the Republican Party of New Mexico. Stay tuned for the third segment where we're going to talk about exciting things. One of the lead Democrats on the Intelligence Committee sleeping with the enemy, literally. So stay tuned and we'll talk a little bit about Eric Swalwell.
On behalf of the New Mexico Department of Health, take COVID-19 precautions. Wash your hands frequently for 20 seconds. Don't touch your face. Use a tissue or your elbow to catch your sneeze or cough. Avoid large gatherings and close contact with sick people, especially if you are elderly or high risk. If you have a cough, fever, or shortness of breath, stay home from work or school. Do not go to the ER or doctor's office without first calling the coronavirus hotline. And avoid all unnecessary out-of-state travel. Help prevent the spread of COVID-19.
Welcome back to Inside New Mexico, and I'm talking with the chairman of our Republican Party, Steve Pierce. Steve, there was a movie a while back called Sleeping with the Enemy. Now we've got a real-life case. Tell us about it.
Well, I served with Eric Swalwell. He's from California. He was a staffer and a very young member that got elected to the U.S. Congress from California. He got placed on the very important Intel Committee. That's the Intelligence Committee. They handle the very top secret information for the country, even access to things that we as regular congressional members didn't have access to. And it turns out he's been sleeping with a Chinese spy. And so you have the whole specter of the Biden administration and Hunter Biden selling favors to the Chinese in return for money. And now you've got one of the most important committees in the U.S. Congress being compromised with a Chinese spy that is literally sleeping with one of the members of that committee. You don't know what information they've shared. And so I think the Republican calls to have him eliminated off the committee are appropriate. You just can't even have the hint of a scandal here in this sort of a position. So we'll see where that goes. In other national news, I serve on the advisory board for the Ex-Im Bank. That's the Export-Import Bank of the United States. They got reauthorized last year for 7 years. Usually those reauthorizations are for 4 years. But the Trump team really stood up strong and got conservative Republicans to agree to this longer term. And one of the most important instructions that that law gave to the Ex-Im Bank was to start competing heads up with China. As you know, China has taken a lot of our jobs. One of the failures of the Ex-Im Bank was actually written into the procedures of the bank, and that was that they couldn't loan money if less than 85% of the content of a product was made in the USA. That was a union provision trying to take a protective stance to protect American jobs. But the truth is that it allowed the Chinese to come in and just take products that have 50, 60, and 70% U.S. content, knowing that we weren't going to be able to export those without some help from the Ex-Im Bank. And the Chinese were really just walking through the market. So this week, the board of Ex-Im decided to lower that content requirement to 51%. That's very much in line with all of our trading partners. Some of them have as low as 20% content, and the Chinese themselves are in the 50% range, where their international trading banks will lend for their products to be marketed overseas. So international trade is a huge issue, and that was a major step that was taken just this week. I want to talk a little bit about things in the state. It's always really sad to see an administration that sort of loses control of the flow of the government. But you know that we've been very critical of the governor. We know that she's working under tremendous pressures that none of us could have foreseen. But there was a kid that committed suicide. His parents notified the school district, and the school district then notified the state public education department of that passing and asked to have him removed off the rolls. So that was earlier this year. And so life went on and things were about to get normal for the family. And then they got a form letter from the state PED, the public education department, saying their son was not showing up for classes, that they felt like he was a truant. And they were telling the family they needed to make sure he was there. I want you to listen to the mom as she expresses her opinions about getting that form letter. The governor has never made comment. After great public pressure, TV spots run on this. A PED apologized, but our governor has never made comment on it. So listen as the mom expresses her opinion.
At first, I was in shock. I didn't understand why we were receiving a letter like that for my son, who has been dead about 8 months. It was very re-traumatizing, I guess you could say.
That clip is from KOB TV4 in Albuquerque.
So the kids need to be back in school. If my calculations are right, the kids in New Mexico are more at risk of dying by suicide than they are from COVID. There's almost no cases of kids anywhere in the world getting COVID. It just doesn't transmit into the younger populations. But we still have our schools basically shut completely down, and our young people are struggling mightily. Then you have this PED that seems to be just out of touch with reality. They had advised the state a couple of weeks ago that there had 12,000 kids that they were wondering where they were. They just aren't showing up for school. How do you miss 12,000 kids all the way into November and then ask the question, where are they? You should have noticed those the first day that classes were convened. And so, again, this administration is running pretty well out of control. And another just ham-fisted move, the governor announced that they could only have a certain occupancy in our food stores and in the grocery stores. Immediately, food lines started forming. Again, the press had stories of senior citizens who were needing to go to the restroom. They couldn't get out of line, freezing temperatures, people were standing there in the cold, needing to go to the bathroom, and they couldn't, or they lost their place in the line. The lines sometimes were 45 minutes to 2 hours, and that was just another catastrophe as we began winter season. And so the governor then comes back and says, we're not going to do that. We're going to let you not be in lines. And they were even rejecting the idea that lines were actually forming. It's as if no one in the administration actually went out and looked for themselves to see. They said that the discussion about long lines was simply a Republican talking point. Well, that is always a risky position for any politician or government agency to take, but they took it, and now then they've had to reverse their field on yet another policy that they put into place and suddenly reverse themselves. So it just looks a lot like chaos coming out of Santa Fe, but we'll see where it goes. With all of the preventions, and New Mexico has got some of the most restrictive regulations in the country, we still now are running some of the highest infection rates. With the governor's new red, yellow, green program, I'm not sure any of the counties are ever going to get out and get into the green status. And even if they do, you still have to operate at 50% capacity. Businesses generally make anywhere from 10% to 25% net profit. That means that you have to get about 75% of your customers in the door before you start making a profit. So when they're restricted to 25%, we guarantee you none of those businesses are going to stay in business long. When you get to 50%, all that does is extend out the pain. So this pandemic and the response to it by our governor is playing out in a slow motion, a catastrophe that is hitting us right now. We wish her well. We hope that they get their feet underneath them and start doing the things to open businesses back up and realize we cannot stay shut down for the rest of our history. People have to feed their families. They have to go to work. Kids have to go to school. We have to live with the risks and manage the risks. In my generation, we did that with polio. It was a very destructive disease for a lot of young people when I was growing up and in school. We managed that. We never shut the schools down. I think we're going to have to find a way to get our kids back in school. But Derek, a tremendous program today. I appreciate everything.
Thank you, Steve. And before we go, I just want to remind our listeners, if you'd like to get involved with the Republican Party of New Mexico, please check out the webpage at www.gopnm.org. There's a Facebook page and a Twitter account. The handle is at New Mexico GOP. You can also call party headquarters after the holidays at 505-298-3662. That's 505-298-3662. Steve?
We wish everyone a Merry Christmas as we go forward and look forward to talking to you again next week on Inside New Mexico.